Americans have been told this country is on alert for a terrorist attack using biological or chemical weapons. Federal officials have even recommended that people have plastic sheeting and duct tape so they can quickly seal up windows and doors. There's no way to calculate the overall risk of an attack, but terrorism experts have some hunches about the kinds of weapons that would be used, the most likely targets, and how many people might be affected. NPR's John Hamilton reports.
The experts have been pondering risks of a biological or chemical attack for decades. Most other Americans didn't give it much thought until a few years ago. David Franz, who led several UN biological inspection teams to Iraq, says the risk of an attack got harder to ignore in late 1997. That's when many people first heard about anthrax spores.
Secretary of Defense Bill Cohen on some of the Sunday morning talk shows held up that bag of Domino sugar and said if this were high-quality, respirable talcum powder-like Bacillus anthracis and we spread it around the Beltway in D.C., we could kill half the population.
Franz says government officials mentioned anthrax spores because terrorists are more likely to use them than many other biological weapons. The spores are highly deadly, easy to release in the air, and stable, meaning they can sit around for decades and still do the job. Franz says that puts anthrax at one end of the biological weapon scale.
Plague would be on the other end of that extreme. It's just not very stable at all in the environment. Then if you go to botulinum toxin, it's fairly stable, but it's not nearly as effective by inhalation as it is by injection, for example. Ricin is almost not toxic enough to use as an inhalational agent.
Smallpox, while deadly, requires close contact with an infected person, and it can be prevented with a vaccine even after exposure. Even anthrax spores won't harm many people unless they're prepared and released in just the right way. Franz says the anthrax letters sent to Senators Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy are a good example. He says they were potent, yet relatively ineffective.
Five people died, and that was a tragedy. But with the amount of material that they had of the quality that it was, I think a lot more people could have died had they done it in different ways, for example.
Like putting them into the ventilation ducts of a subway system or a shopping mall. Even then, Franz says, terrorists using anthrax spores would not threaten an entire city.
Cities are tough targets. Even if they cross the very difficult technical hurdles of producing a high-quality formulation like we saw in the Daschle or the Leahy letters.
That's why few bioterrorism experts expect a citywide attack. Barbara Hatch-Rosenberg of the State University of New York in Purchase says it's very unlikely that an attack would affect even a large part of a city. To do that, terrorists would need serious equipment, like planes, bombs, and sprayers.
First of all, planes with bombs and sprayers wouldn't get through. It'd be too obvious. And anyway, they haven't got those capabilities. So even countries that are developing these weapons don't necessarily have the capability to deliver a large-scale attack of that sort through the air.
And Rosenberg says even a much smaller scale assault wouldn't be easy in a nation that is actively looking for signs of terrorism.
It is conceivable that an attack could be carried out in a relatively enclosed space, like an air circulation system in one building, something of that sort. I think the probability of that is extremely small in any case. It's much less likely than getting run over when you cross the street.
Nerve gas and other chemical weapons also work best in a confined space. And while a so-called dirty bomb could expose a lot of people to some radiation, few would receive a fatal dose. David Franz says a small, low-tech attack is more likely than a large, sophisticated one. But he says it's impossible to calculate the risk that an attack of some sort might take place. One reason is that it's much harder to know whether a foreign nation is making biological weapons than, say, Scud missiles.
I can walk into a facility that's making biological terrorism weapons and maybe not know it. I may think they're making vaccines that day.
Franz says another problem is that a bioweapons lab, unlike a missile factory, takes up so little space it can be hidden almost anywhere. Franz says it is all the uncertainty surrounding a potential terror attack that makes everyone so uneasy. John Hamilton, NPR News, Washington.